Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paul Hawksby
and Andy Jacobs.
And welcome once again to the H&J Daily, some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. We had a bit of a chat about various matters, which you will hear. We also had the book club with Luke Moore, and we were joined by the author, James Kerr, of a book called Legacy. James kindly joined us at about 2:10 in the morning from New Zealand, but as you'll discover, he probably wished he hadn't.
He held his own.
Also, we had a chat with Mark Smith, the comedian, Derby fan. Because they're the forgotten side in the Frank Lampard deal.
Sure.
So we ran some of the runners and riders to take over from Frank and how he feels about losing his manager. So we'll bring you all that. And here it is.
I watched a mixture of football last night. I watched the bit of the Canada. Was it, who were they playing? I can't even remember.
Sweden, Canada.
It was a bit boring, really. Somebody said it was in the papers. Oh, a very exciting game. I think, well, it wasn't really. And there was no presenter coverage of it. So it was quite dry at half time. So, because it was on the red button.
Right. And actually, they had a commentary, though, didn't they?
Oh, they had a commentary, yeah. But the. The actual England Croatia game in the under 21s was actually quite a good game.
Yeah, for a dead rubber, it was very open, wasn't it?
It was open in England
too
game
open for, from England's point of view.
Brekalo looks like a prospect for them. That was a great finish, two great finishes actually. And going forward they look good, but they're defensively not good enough.
Yeah, we're going to come back to that and have a bit of a roundup of the under 21s with Paul Jiggins, who's been out there for the Sun, and he's found a few positives despite everything. And he'll tell us what they are a little bit later.
The penalty in the Spain America game, I think we've gone bonkers, haven't we? I mean, how's that a penalty? The second one, especially. I mean, to me, that was a clear dive. There was the contact.
Isn't
was
it refreshing
so...
to watch a sport where there's no play acting or diving? Does one actually exist?
Exactly. And the contact.
Well, look, she was caught.
Oh, so slightly.
She was caught, but then she did an Uvic I've fallen. Didn't
oh,
she?
I know.
She,
you know,
Mr. Grimsdale.
It was a long
when
time.
When she realised she wasn't
going to
reach
the ball.
It was a
long time after the contact. I just thought that you don't give a penalty for that. You know, no. A penalty is a goal. You know, you've got to think about this. You know, it's got to be worth something. That just wasn't worth it. In a crucial game like that, a 1-1, I thought it was a poor decision.
I think, you know, we should stop holding out by some sort of Corinthian ideal, because it's not fair and it's not true. And as we've said, as the stakes rise with the amount of money that's in women's football and the opportunities to play at clubs around the world, you're going to see more of that. There's so much more riding on it. So,
Never mind. Slaven Bilic has said that managing in the Championship was on his bucket list. Don't know, I'm more swimming with the dolphins or seeing the pyramids myself. I don't know.
It does seem odd when you're managing a top division. Yeah. You said, I'm enjoying this, but I'd much rather work in the second tier.
I wonder what went wrong.
Oh, they're all in today. We've got a look. There's a bit of a break in play. We've got Gareth Southgate is sitting next to Michael McIntyre.
Was
in
he?
At the ground. They're having a sitting.
Oh, right.
They're probably in the same hospitality box, and they've gone, I don't know what they're chatting about. Michael, bit of a Spurs fan. He'll be talking up Harry Kane, I think. Ed Sheeran's there this afternoon.
Oh, lovely,
It was a hot ticket, as you can imagine, of course, wasn't it?
Oh, very hot ticket, really.
Rory Bremner, you've spotted there. Stuart Broad, he's having a chat with Stuart Broad. All the stars are out, as you can imagine.
Because I was lucky enough to sit in that hospitality bit once, and it is quite hard.
Quite starring.
Stephen Fry next to me and all that, you know.
Did you have a chat? You're normally quite bold, just marching up to people saying, hi, Andy Jacobs.
Talk sport.
Out goes the hand. Oh, you throw the talk sport in as well, do you?
Oh, yeah, I like
to. Nice, that's nice.
I find that's a door opener.
Is it really?
Not really, no. It's a door slammed in the face.
Yeah.
Would be more accurate, good. I'd say. And tonight's race meeting at Newbury.
Oh, yeah.
What a great night it's going to be for plumbers. It's a plumber's day out. Okay, the 7:10, the Pegasus Pumps Limited Handicap, 7:40, the Young Pumpin' and Pump Technology Handicap, 8:15, the Pump Technology Handicap, and 8:45, the Lee San Marine Sanitation Handicap.
Wow, fantastic.
Sounds a load of bilge to me.
I'm going to take me rods. Not often I take me rods racing. Yeah.
Be good.
You might get a bit of a discount going in. So is this a completely sponsored evening?
Yeah,
I take
at Newbury. Yeah,
the Young Pumpin'. I don't know the sound of that. It sounds like a. That's a bit worrying, doesn't it? Really,
that's what it's called.
Yeah, okay.
I don't make these things up.
Well,
the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Yeah, every week we have a close look at a sports book. Many of those kind of shortlisted for the Sports Book of the Year, kind of award-winning books from different sports. We were aware of the fact we'd not really covered a rugby union book. And Luke Moore, who's with us now from Football Ramble, of course, and the season ticket here on TalkSport every Friday, had one in mind. Luke, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to both of you. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Now, this was... Oh, dear.
You've got to be kidding me.
No, I really wish I was. I think we're going to cross very shortly to Guy Swindles because
I told you Jason Roy was a miss.
We were sitting here just now saying if just James Vince can raise his bat, whether it's 50 or 100, yeah, it will make such a difference to him.
I just think England
clean bowl through the gate.
I just don't understand why England didn't bat first. I don't get it. You're under so much pressure when you bat second. Bonkers. Anyway,
long way to go. England have lost a wicket. First man down. James Vince sadly has gone. So England are not.
Wasn't a great shot.
It's a horrendous dismissal as well. By the way,
horrible shot.
The gap between his bat and his pad about awful. 6 inches wide.
Pressure does to you. Anyway, let's go on to
Vince's book.
James Kerr's book, Legacy, What the All Blacks Can Teach Us About the Business of Life. So it's worth giving a bit of background to James Kerr. We're going to chat to him later on.
Yeah, James Kerr is an author, motivational speaker, and I mean, he can tell you himself a bit later on about the things he gets up to. The book is Legacy, What the All Blacks Can Teach Us About the Business of Life, and the subtitle is 15 Lessons in Leadership. We haven't done a rugby book before, as you guys have already said, and I thought it was high time we did one. And what better place to start than the All Blacks, really? I mean, they're the most successful men's rugby side of all time, with a winning percentage of apparently 77.41% across 580 tests in over 100 years.
I mean, just shy of sort of 75% in 125 years, which suggests it's not kind of cyclical, does it really?
it could be a very long cycle.
I had a problem with this book, though, I have to say. Number one, it made me hope that anybody else but the All Blacks win the World Cup in September. I thought, stop shoving it down my throat. You get the idea, you're good at rugby. And doesn't mean you're better than us, just means you're better at rugby. And I find these books where they're full of aphorisms and platitudes that people put on Instagram and Facebook, and they appear in your timeline, and you just think, oh, shut up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but that's me. I don't like these ideas of the way you can, you know, things like. Sweep the sheds. Never be too big to do the small things that need to be done. It's fairly obvious, isn't it?
But do you not find that absolutely fascinating? That the finest that we've just established, the finest team sport team in history, the first thing they do after they win a game is take care of cleaning up after themselves in the dressing room, because that's something that's always been done in the history of the team. You'd think that Chelsea do that.
No, Japan do it. It doesn't help them win the World Cup, does it?
I don't think
the reason they're fantastic at rugby and win the World Cup and have a 75% win record, it's got anything to do with the fact they clean the dressing room afterwards. I think it's just the fact they're very, very good at rugby and they're obsessed with rugby. And I think it's more like Matthew Syed's thing that as you grow up as a young New Zealander, rugby is in your blood. Rugby is all around you. The opportunity to become a good rugby player, a great rugby player, is there.
Look, I don't think they're suggesting that there's a direct link between being tidy and being the finest sports or the finest athletes around. But what I do think they think, and I was personally fairly convinced by the argument in the book, that you take care of all these little things and as they add up, they do actually mean something. I mean, the first thing that the guys at Team Sky did when they won all those cycling events and the Tour de France and the Olympic stuff is take care of all the details, and the details are important. And what it does is it feeds into a larger whole. And I'm sure James, when he comes on later, will be able to tell us about this. The idea that, you know, it's not just about the kind of athlete you are and how hard you work. I mean, it is about those things, but it's about the kind of person you are as well. I was personally, I don't know how you feel, Paul, but I was personally quite convinced of the idea that better people make better sports people and but better athletes. I mean, clearly the focus is important and the way you conduct yourself and carry yourself is important. And I think it's great that they're very aware of their place in history. I find that fascinating.
Yeah, there are aspects of it I bought into. There is that thing though, isn't there? It's kind of, it's a kind of a mythology. No, that's not right. It's almost kind of leveled to the, it's kind of raised to a sort of deity. The way it's written about is that it's not just about sport. It's about much more than that. And it's
and
kind of.
And I think we all do. I think we all do subscribe to that in essence. I'll give you another example. You know, when Manchester United talk a lot, when there's a lot of talk about who's going to wear the number 7 shirt next season at Man United, we all know the reason why that conversation's happening, because of the great players that come along in the past. I mean, yeah, you'd be the same with whatever team you support and the great players down the years. Accepting your place within this larger pantheon of what the team actually is, I think it's really interesting. There's also one thing that actually I found very surprising in this book is that James Kerr, the author, insists that there is no pre-match team talk in the All Blacks dressing room before a game. The players are left to their own devices to get their head around what's happening and to get focused, because the thinking is if an All Black isn't ready by that point, and they shouldn't be there anyway. I mean, I find that absolutely, because the first thing you would think of is that the manager's going to come in and give this rousing team talk or explain what's happening, yet they don't do that at all in New Zealand. And the thing that, and that was one of the few things that made me wonder, if other people are just doing things wrong, whether the conceived wisdom and the established thinking about certain ways to run top level sports teams are just wrong, and New Zealand are doing it in which seems like a kind of opposite way that you'd think, but that's actually the way to be doing it.
Yeah. I tell you what's interesting, that we've been lucky enough over the years to kind of interview in person some of the top players, some of the guys that would probably be in a lot of people's top tens, like Sean Fitzpatrick and Jonah Lomu a couple of times, and Richie McCaw came in the studio.
Richie McCaw features in the book an awful lot.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. And they talk a lot about humility. And, you know, just guys are in the best of the best, the kind of legends. There can be a bit of a side to them. But I always felt, certainly with McCaw, when he came in, he was right at the top of his game when he came in with Ali Williams.
I don't think you can simplify it like this, you see, because I'll tell you a footballer with no humility whatsoever, which is Cristiano Ronaldo, and he's probably the second best player of all time, you know. So I'm not sure that these things actually apply to universally. I think, and I'm not saying it's wrong to be humble, I think it's a good thing, but you know, I don't think those are the reasons that make you a great sportsman. I think it's something intrinsically within you, and it's something about the upbringing and the 10,000 hours things, the access to coaching. And I think all this comes kind of afterwards when somebody's very, very successful. Mm. You can sort of start doing these things.
Sort of backfill the narrative kind of thing.
Well, I think there's an element of that.
One thing is absolutely clear. I used to live in New Zealand. I was there 15, 16 years ago. One thing is absolutely clear. It is a complete factory when it comes to producing top level rugby players. And that's obviously not open for debate. Clearly that is the case. But I think a large part of this book is trying to take what they do very well and seeing if you can apply it to other areas of life to give yourself a better chance of success in whatever it is you're doing. I think the backfilling of the narrative is an interesting thing, because I do think in most walks of life, if you grab someone and say, how did you become a millionaire or whatever, the reality might well be they didn't have a plan. It just happened, and they worked really hard and they got a bit lucky along the way or whatever. But clearly that's not a great story, is it? People don't write books about that. So maybe there is an element of backfilling the narrative going along. But I do think the things that are interesting within this book are sufficient enough for people to pick it up and go, I didn't know that's how this team did that. I find it fascinating what goes on behind the scenes, because a lot of it isn't necessarily what you'd expect. Mm. And it is, some of it at least, is applicable to your own life in different ways. And one thing they're very, very interested in and tapped into is the history of their country, like the Maori folklore and wisdom and indigenous people's kind of experiences and stuff. And they are also very, one thing I think we can hopefully all agree on is they all appear, based on this book, to be very, very appreciative of what it means to be a part of that legendary team, which has been built up since 1903. It's got a rich history, and
they have a big intimidation factor as well.
Doesn't hurt, does it, to be like that?
But personally, and again, I mean, you won't agree with me, but I think the hackers should be banned. I think it's cheating. I think it's a sort of, I do. I think it's a kind of intimidation that you've got no choice. So however you react to it, they react in a certain way. So if you stand and you ignore it, they feed off that. If you engage them, they feed off that. I find it a bit sort of like, I quite like it, but it's got, I've noticed, I watched an old hacker from the sort of like the 70s, I think, when the famous All Blacks.
It's quite comedy, isn't it, watching it?
Yeah. It's nothing like the thing now. It's become this massive, overhyped, too much of a thing, really. So, you know, I like the myth of it, but I'm not, you know.
Would you be open to the idea of perhaps England doing like a Morris dance in like response?
I don't think we'd have the edge. Really. You can't really do a throat cutting gesture at the end of a Morris dance where you're holding a couple of hankies and wearing a bowler hat.
With bells
and you've
around
got
your
bells
ankles.
On your socks. that moment where all the England players have to take the bells off their socks.
I'm not, you know, it is spectacular, really. Especially the final moment where they all leap up. Well, of course, it's a great sight.
I mean, he says in the book they were going to get rid of the hacker at one point. They decided they weren't going to carry on with it. Anyway, we're going to have a chat with the author. He's kindly got up in the middle of the night.
I know, so I better keep quiet.
I'm sure he'll take your criticisms on board. But we'll have a chat with James Kerr about the book, Legacy, what the All Blacks can teach us about the business of life.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Hawksby and Jacobs Book Club on Talk Sport.
Yeah, Book Club this afternoon. We're chatting about James Kerr's book, Legacy, What the All Blacks Can Teach Us About the Business of Life. And very kindly, despite the late hour, or very the early hour probably, the author, James Kerr, has joined us now from his home in New Zealand. Good afnoon, James. Oh, sorry. Oh,
hello, guys.
What time is it with you?
Good morning, I think.
I dread to think.
Quarter to two in the morning.
We really appreciate you joining us.
That's very nice of you. The book has caused a lot of interest and chat in the first part of this thing. I mean, Luke, who's reviewed the book for us, he really thinks there's something to it. I have to be honest and say I had a slight problem with the book in terms of aphorisms and platitudes and... whether these things, a lot of it struck me as the sort of thing people put on Facebook to sort of inspire them. And I just wondered how much of the fact that New Zealand are brilliant at rugby is more important than actually some of these things that they try and live by.
Good. Nice start. Thanks very much for that.
Well, I thought I might as well. I mean, go on.
Yeah. Put it on the line. I think the thing, you know, rugby's a simple sport. Simple ideas go a long, long way. You know, in the heat of pressure, in the heat of battle, bringing together a team, bringing together a bunch of people, simple universal ideas have huge currency. You know, they really do. You can call them platitudes if you want. I don't necessarily believe that they are. I think that they hold kind of a richness and a depth of meaning that create the kind of conditions that you want for a world-class team. And these guys, you know, are the world-class team. So it clearly works. You know, whether that's a matter of to your taste or not, I think the proof is in the pudding to an extent. You know, nearly 80% of win ratio over 125 years sort of puts paid to opinion, I would say.
James, is it the case then, are we talking about the idea that they cease to become platitudes, as Andy calls them, if the people involved actually really buy into them, believe in them and carry them out, and they become manifest, if you like? That's what separates them from being platitudes to being actual good, solid ideas.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's about behaviour. You know, you know, a great culture is a set of behaviours. And if you get the behaviours right, it acts as what the military would call a force multiplier to your talent, you know. And you want to align around some pretty simple ideas. You know, if you want to go back in time, all the old, you know, the Vedic chronicles, you know, the basis of all the world's religion started with some pretty simple phrases, you know thyself. Very, very simple. And they become platitudes with repetition. And when you see them on Facebook, they're already platitudes, I'd say. But the simplicity of those ideas, those kind of threads of ideas that hold it together, shape behaviors. And if you get those behaviors right, you make the most of your talent and you keep on making the most of your talent. Yes.
But how much is the All Blacks' success due to access? I don't know if you're aware of Matthew Syed's book Bounce, but you know, this thing of being access to great coaching when you're young, because this is a rugby mad country with massive success. It kind of defines almost the New Zealand nation, and so therefore, you know, a lot of their success comes from the fact they produce, don't they, a lot of great rugby players.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a multi, you know, it's a complex system. There's a multitude of facts behind the All Blacks' success. You know, they 125 years ago, they kind of lit up, or 100 odd years ago, they lit up the fields of England and of Britain. And that legacy, if you like, proved that the small island nation in the middle of nowhere could kind of, you know, compete with the world and win. And so that the pride and the benchmark that sent is massive. And that's helped shape, you know, they talk about it's a religion in New Zealand, much more than a game of rugby. And but it's also, you know, it's a small country, but it's big enough to produce talent. It has a great demographic spread between, you know, Fijian wingers and sort of the macaws of this world, the sort of Scottish emigres sort of heaving, doing the hard work up the front. And it's got fantastic clarity of pathways. You know, it's got coaches and competitions that mean that talent is spotted from very, very young age and nurtured. And, you know, the greatest thing you can hear in New Zealand is, you know, one day, son, you'll be an All Black. And that visibility and transparency and the pathways are very, very strong and lead to, you know, make it a talent factory.
James, someone you mentioned who came up there is Richie McCaw, and he features in the book again and again as this guy who typifies these values. And I know the chaps in the studio here have met Richie and were very impressed by him. And, I mean, is he the keystone to all this? Is he the guy that typifies it more than anything else?
Well, he's certainly one of the great All Blacks, you know, and he's a guy who lets his behaviour do the talking, if you like, you know, he's got the record to prove it: a couple of World Cups, 148 appearances for his country, and one of the toughest positions you can choose to play in world sport. I mean, an exceptional athlete and an exceptional kind of character, and that. You know, in the book, I'm really interested in, you know, that how character kind of shapes destiny, if you like. How, you know, they talk in the All Blacks, better people make better All Blacks. How the total package of a human being, it becomes more than just talent and performance on the pitch. It becomes, you know, 180 degree view of what it means to be an All Black, and what it means and what greatness means. And I think, yes, he absolutely embodies that. Clearly one of the great rugby players and as you say, you know, a hugely impressive character.
Graham Henry was in charge of the team at this time, James, when you wrote the book. I mean, I suppose all the coaches effectively must buy into these values if they're going to be part of the setup. Everybody comes in to the structure. Could you ever foresee a time when somebody comes in and says, no, let's kind of rip the rule book up, it's kind of my way or the highway, or do the hierarchy there around New Zealand rugby buy into it every bit as much as the coaching staff?
Well, yeah, I think they do. And I think you know, you'd be crazy to chuck out the baby with the bathwater in a way. You know, it's got such an extraordinary legacy, extraordinary ancestry, and a sense of kind of meaning, what it means to be an All Black. And, you know, I think you'd be kind of crazy to chuck that one out. Inevitably, there'll be a time that the wheels fall off, you know, this particular culture, and there'll need to be a reboot at another time. But I think the continuity and the consistency of approach has been, you know, hugely powerful for this team. And, you know, if you look at Steve Hansen, the current All Blacks coach, has been with the team, I think, 16, 17 years. Gilbert Anoka, the mental skills coach, nearly 20. The level of consistency at the top and therefore the coherence of that team is massive, and is one of the massive factors, I think, for their ongoing success.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Well, look, we must thank you very much for getting up.
Yeah, thanks, James.
We did have a chat about The Hacker. Your book starts with that. I've called for it to be banned, but there you go.
Although they did. You say in the book, James, they did. There was a period when they weren't going to kind of continue with The Hacker. They were thinking of stopping doing that.
Yeah, so in 2000, exactly. In 2004, the Hacker had sort of lost its meaning, I think, for the players, and they were going to turf it out. But they rebooted effectively and created as a team for the team a new haka. And I think one of the things that, you know, we see it perform from the outside, but really the team performs it for themselves. We saw that in Wales when the Welsh got a bit strange about the haka being performed, and they performed it for themselves in the locker room. And because it's such a powerful embodiment, literally an embodiment of what it means to be an All Black and a connective, galvanizing force, it's not really about terrifying the opposition. It's really about bonding the team. And so, love it or hate it, you know, you're asking the wrong guy about it. I love the haka, and I can see that. And so does the country. And you can see it galvanizing both the team and also the country around the team. It's a uniquely New Zealand tradition, and that's hugely valuable for us as Kiwis.
Sure. Good stuff, James. Thanks so much, James, for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, total pleasure. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
James Kerr there, 2 o'clock in the morning, God bless him. Legacy, what the All Blacks can teach, just have Randy have a go at him, what the All Blacks can teach us about the business. I think it goes out for about 15K to speak to businesses.
Oh, yeah, look, a lot of people will really enjoy...
I think you may have the last laugh.
No, yeah. And a lot of people will love this book and get a lot out of it.
I think they will.
I'm just, you know, a bit of an old cynic. And
you've got to be honest, you've got to talk about it.
I have to speak as I found when I was reading.
It doesn't help the England are losing wickets. That can actually darken his mood.
No, that's not true, because I said that. That before I came
know.
In.
Can we bike one of these over to Lords for the but just very, I know we've got to wrap up, but very, very quickly, I think one thing that James touched on there, which I think is interesting, and how it relates to the football teams and the team sports teams here that we like, it's a culture, right? When a new coach comes in, based on the back of your question, when a new manager or a new coach and staff comes in, they already know the culture.
Yeah.
For so many
years, they've
probably
been part of it as a player.
Exactly. Many years watching the England football team, for example, all of us here, it would be ripped up and started again every single time.
Sure.
And so the idea, I think, partly is to avoid that kind of thing, because everyone knows what to expect and what they're there for. It's published by Constable. It's available now by James Kerr, Legacy, What the All Blacks Can Teach Us About the Business of Life, 15 Lessons in Leadership. And if you like rugby, but if you also like what makes the best team in sporting history tick, that is the book for you.
Good stuff. Thank you very much, Luke.
Thanks for you guys. Thanks for your time.
We'll go down a different road next week. We decide what we're going to do.
Shoe Dog.
Oh, yeah, Shoe Dog. Yeah, very
Phil
different
Knight,
sort
the
of
founder
book.
Of Nike.
That's right, yeah.
I've started it already. It's fascinating.
Good stuff. We're going to be talking about that next week.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
So batting second was supposed to avoid an early collapse. Well done.
Well, these two have got us out of trouble before, and that's the only positive you can find at the moment quite a few times, haven't they? Bairstow and Stokes. So
Butler still can make a run, but it's down to these three, and that's a lot of runs to make between three blokes, and it's not looking good. And having gone into the tournament as favourites and playing well, honestly, the way they've performed in this tournament has been fairly poor, really.
Mm.
You know, not good. And another defeat... Batting second would tell you that perhaps next time you might think of batting first. You know, it might be a better idea. I don't know. Anyway, what can you do? Right, we've been talking about VAR, as you may have noticed.
A few people, to be honest.
Yes, quite a few people. Neil in Blackpool, who wrote to the Daily Star, was a very novel, very novel idea. He said, why doesn't every footballer, either men or women, say no to VAR? If that's used, we refuse to play. It's causing too much controversy. Get it out or we walk out. Brilliant.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, like, the league sign up for it, but you as players decide.
Yeah, so, no, we're not doing
it. No, we're not. If you're using those cameras, we're not going on. Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah, do you want tattoo news? I've got two lots of tattoo news.
Oh, this one is fantastic.
The main tattoo nose is news, not tattoo nose. What a place to tattoo. It's Greg's fan, Nicole Reed, 19.
I know.
Nicole got a tattoo of the Greg's Bakery logo.
Yeah.
And that entitled her to a free pasty. But that's basic economics, isn't it? I mean, what's a tattoo? That tattoo must have cost at least 100 quid.
Yeah.
What's a pasty? You can probably get two for 3 quid, can't
yeah.
you? She hasn't really done the numbers.
Not really. And, you know, I mean, how much of a fan of Greg's can you be?
I've told you before, my my son's friend decided to have a barcode on his neck. Mm. And they often wondered what it was. So they managed to get it scanned. And it's Tesco packet ham.
Well, the tattooist had to base it on something.
Well, exactly. He'd obviously just gone into his kitchen. And I think he said to him at the time, I need some kind of reference. I'll see what I can find. And so they scanned the top of his neck. And there he is. He is basically processed.
Marvellous.
Economy Tesco tattooed ham. That's what he is these days.
It's excellent.
Nice look.
And did you know, this is an odd one. An article in The Guardian questions whether winking is socially acceptable in 2019. It is official. We've all gone mad. And the reason is that if you wink with somebody, it's sort of conspiratorial,
yeah.
but you're excluding other people from the joke sort of thing. So, you know, we saw Camilla kind of wink at, I can't remember who she was winking when she was with Trump recently. But
yeah.
She did a sort of wink to the side to the camera.
You don't often, it's the wink has died out, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
You don't see many of them. I'm looking next door at the many
PC.
Young people. Can you even? I look at our producer. Are you? Can you wink, John? Is it something you've
nice.
He's got quite a little.
That was like an emoji.
Yeah, that was. And also, he did that little twist of the head.
Yeah.
He's like. Basically, he's a young man, but he could have been a 60-year-old milkman doing all these red top gags. So the that's good. Becky's on the. Can you wink, Becky? Can you? Oh yes, she's doing the head as well.
It helps.
Andy there. Andy on the. No, he can't wink. No, he's afraid. That's it.
Can't win them all, can you?
Yeah.
And the Sun had a feature this morning about the high-priced Gucci tracksuits. I don't know if you've seen these things. They're about 1,800. We spotted them last year. We were in Harvey Nichols in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
We're going through there. They've got a very good menswear department, so we thought we're going to have a look.
Oh, yeah.
And then these tracksuits, I mean, I was like, these were 1,500 quid. You're going, who'd want to wear this?
You're going to have money, haven't you?
Well, you and no taste.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Apart from that,
step forward, Lewis Hamilton. Is that what you're saying?
Well, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
America's Generation Z. I don't know who they are. But anyway, I suppose it's people born at a certain time. You want to explain it to me.
Yeah.
Are snubbing deodorant or antiperspirant.
Post-millennials.
Post-millennials, yeah. According to a poll, about 40% of 18 to 24-year-olds said they hadn't used deodorant in the last month. And almost half hadn't purchased deodorant in the past year.
Okay.
It's incredible, isn't it? I suppose that's a sort of... Is that a green thing, ecological thing?
I suppose it must be. Yeah. Or they maybe just
but
like,
roll-ons are all right.
They like stinking.
Mind you, that's all plastic,
not sure. I'm not a scientist, Andy. I'm not roll-ons are all right,
well, it's
aren't
the spray, I can understand, yeah. but then the roll-ons are full of plastic.
I didn't ask you, Andy. Can you wink? Are you capable of... No, it looks like that's a twitch. You see, that's the difference. You've turned into a twitch. You're doing the mouth as well. You're giving us a bit of Scott Parker mouth with it. That's not... It doesn't really quite work, does it?
Ideal, really, is it?
Quite as well.
What can you do? And of course, I wonder why people write this stuff in. You can't do anything about it. But Axel wrote to the Daily Star. He said, "Now it's the tennis season."
Where will
season.
We be without the Daily Star?
Well,
Star's
it keeps me going
page.
In the off season.
Sure.
Now it's the tennis season. I do hope it's not going to monopolise the TV schedules. I.e., programmes will be shown at a later date. Don't forget, not everybody likes tennis. Well, it's a bit late to be writing that, isn't it? After wall-to-wall
it's,
Wimbledon
it's dominated
coverage,
British TV for 2 weeks, probably for about. Well, ever since telly was invented, really, wasn't it?
What's the point of writing that?
Once they became readily available. So to start railing against it now, I think that ship has sailed, don't you?
Yeah,
really,
I do, really. Say. Interesting throwback to Sunday's game against Cameroon for the women, England women, the Lionesses. Yeah. Last night, Martin Tyler and a lot of people, the Cameroon players said the flag had gone up. That's why they were upset. Martin Tyler mentioned it too.
For the Ellen White.
But I went back and I listened to Jonathan Pearce in commentary, and he clearly says in commentary, the flag has stayed down. Now it's gone up.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what actually happened here. Where did it go up? Is that what made them? They didn't really stop, did they?
No, they didn't stop.
Oh, we're going to get a lot of this next season. It's a bit of a disaster, isn't it? Really?
Not as much of a disaster as England's reply to 285.
I thought they'd lost another one.
No, it's not quite that bad. 30-3. At the moment,
they win from here, then they'll probably win the World Cup. Yeah. I just can't see it myself.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Let's move on. We're going to talk about the forgotten team in this great Frank Lampard loving. Because it now seems, of course, that Frank is off to Chelsea. He was off to Chelsea anyway, but Derby have said earlier on today they've given him permission to. Yeah. Talk to the club.
And Derby will make £4 million out of it. It's not a bad, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's
and they might get a bit of money for Jody Morris as well and for the other performance director.
Sure, feeling a whole lot better about losing his manager who took them, yeah. Mark Smith, comedian and Derby County fan. Hi, Mark.
Hi, guys. How are you?
I'm sure you've all been down there at Pride Park celebrating the £4.5 million you'll get for Jody and Frank. And
well, that's what football's all about, isn't it?
It is. It's all about, for me, football's all about compensation. never mind the glory. To paraphrase Bill, to Danny Blanchflower, it's all about compensation. So,
absolutely right.
Yeah. So how are you feeling, knowing that you just had one season of Frank Lampard with so much promise?
Well, I think it's a day of mixed feelings, really. I think someone of the stature of Frank Lampard, you know, the celebrity and the fame that comes with it, it does elevate the city. I don't want to sound pious, but it elevates the city to a certain level. And it gives us a lot of opportunity that we wouldn't have before. We have a lot more games on TV than we had before. And it's been great for everybody involved. However, it's disappointing it's only lasted one season, if it all goes ahead with Chelsea, as it looks like it will do. And he only really got us one stage further than Gary Rowett with a big budget. So although I like Lampard a lot, and I would absolutely love him to stay, I do think we can recover from this. And hopefully if Mel Morris, our chairman, is happy to invest again, without FFP getting involved,
yeah.
I'm hoping we can sort of kick on and try again.
Well, the £4.5 million will help. They used the loan market really well last year. Tomori, Mount, and Harry Wilson, and probably more of the same will help, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think probably our best three players were all loan players last year, and that's what you get with a big name like Lampard. We're talking about a generation of players who have seen him play at his peak and have grown up with him, thinking of him as a legend. And it's so much easier to attract a player like that. Of that generation to the club when you've got someone like Lampard. So, I mean, I know there's rumours about Gerrard coming in, and he'd offer a similar sort of thing in terms of personality. But I think realistically for us going forward, although Gerrard would be a similar coup as it was for Lampard, I think that someone like Chris Hughton for me would be someone who I could imagine being there for a few years and building something and building up on what Lampard has achieved so far.
And he's good at getting teams promoted.
Yeah, exactly. Chris has got, I mean, something that you want, which is to get out of the Championship and back into the Premier League. And Chris has done that.
Yeah, I mean, I watched Derby last year on telly and live. And one thing that did impress me was the way they played. I thought the style of play was good. And that's something that you want to retain, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think there is also, you know, we're sort of being a bit revisionist here because there was 2 or 3 months in the season, last season, from Christmas to around start of March, where we were very, very poor. We looked like we'd run out of ideas. And we started the season well, we ended the season very well, and it was, I think that covered up, you know, it masked a few of our shortcomings. But I think Chris Hughton, who played great football in the Championship, and only when he got to the Premier League did he play more defensively for Brighton. But you've got to, because you're playing against a different level of opposition. I think there's plenty of places for us to go. I'm not completely downhearted. I just feel like I just wish Lampard had given us a couple of more years.
Let's play a little game.
I think if there hadn't been the transfer ban, I think he probably would have. That's how he would have played.
Yeah, he probably would have done it.
And also, by the way, I can't begrudge him doing this. His family are down there. He's Chelsea, you know, he's Mr. Chelsea. I have no problem with him doing it. I just, you know, missed opportunity for us as Derby.
Timing, players, yeah.
Someone of that calibre. Yeah, that's all.
I've got some of the names on the betting shortlist. And so let's play yes, no, maybe for in the interest of speed. So I'll give you some names and I just need a yes, no or maybe.
I've done this the last 24 hours, by the way, just to let you know.
Sorry?
I've been doing this for the last 24 hours.
Oh, okay. Right, okay. So you'll be well schooled in it. Okay, we kick off with actually the favourite at the moment, one of the favourites, Danny Cowley.
Maybe.
Maybe, okay. Gary Monk.
Maybe.
Oh, okay. Mm. Roy Keane.
No.
With a laugh in the voice. John Terry.
No.
Okay. Chris Hughton, you've told us about. Gary Rowett.
Yes.
Gary Rowett coming back.
I'm not even going to give that an answer.
David Moyes.
Maybe.
Rafa Benitez.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. You'd take Rafa.
Take Rafa.
You're not making Jose. Where's Jose?
Yeah, I've no idea. Gabriel Batistuta.
Where did he come from? Well, yeah, I know where he comes from.
Yeah. Yeah, go on, and yeah, why not?
Yeah, so I thought that wasn't a bad game of yes, no. I think we've worked out from that the kind of manager you're looking for, certainly.
Yeah, well, I think we wanted Jukanovic, but then he seems to have gone to Qatar, which I can only imagine is for the football. So he's there doing that. So, we he's not on the table anymore. So, sadly, no Jukanovic, maybe Houston. Let's wait and see.
And to compound your misery today, it's like your manager's off and you're at Lords. And I'm sorry, I hope you've got sight of the pitch. God. Because we've just lost another wicket, Johnny.
Yeah, I just heard a roar from the crowd.
Johnny Bairstow's gone. Yeah.
So well, cheers, lads.
We spared you that anyway.
What a shot.
You can go and watch it on the big screen. So, yeah, we needed those two to stay in, Mark, didn't we, really? This is not great.
Yeah.
It's not there. The ball's not there for this shot.
It's not. Oh. It's not a good shot. Oh, Johnny, mate. Mark, good to talk to you. We'll catch up with you soon. No doubt we'll have the congratulations and well done Chris Hughton chat. And Mel Morris, if you want to hear from the chairman, he's on with Jim White. He's in the studio for a couple of hours tomorrow. So let your Derby mates know tomorrow. So from the horse's mouth, from the chairman on Jim White's show tomorrow on TalkSport.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show. Tomorrow, we talk about table football, foosball, a new film, which is going to be on Netflix soon, tells the story of the game's growth in America, where it was massive at one point, absolutely massive. And so we'll look at its rise and subsequent fall with the maker of the documentary tomorrow, amongst other things, Tim Vickery, and all sorts of other bits and pieces. So until then, thanks for downloading us.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.